What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's review of the offense. And doing that with me is my old friend, Dev Panchwat. Dev, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, Ken. How are you? It's been a little bit of time, but good to be back and got another playoff chase going, so you can't complain too much.
No, happy about that. That was a kind of an old school Ravens December win against Cincinnati, 24-0. They've won a few December games against Cincinnati, at least one in shutout fashion that I can think of. This one looked great, and overcoming the cold weather, just really a nice touch.
Yeah, I liked it. I feel like it might actually be the better way to win if you're trying to get some momentum going, right? It's a cold weather game, division game. They came in, they said they wanted to end the Bengals season. We got some of the audio after the fact, Kyle Hamilton. I loved the energy, and it did. That part took me back to the way the Ravens would win games. And I think that swagger, the defense in particular, I know we're talking about the offense, but just the energy, right? Like Draymond Jones, the trash talking, that was just great to see.
Physicality was outstanding during the game. And Draymond talked about they didn't really want to play in the cold weather. It was too cold for them. I mean, that did maybe show up a little bit in the play of the game, but I just like the fact that the Ravens did want to play in the game. I mean, the Ravens haven't always looked great this year. That's for sure. They've fumbled away some really good opportunities to win games, and it hasn't been a perfect year by any stretch, but this is a very nice data point to add to a very troubling season. And going into the final three games, they're favored now against New England by 3 points. And I don't think that's unreasonable. And I probably would have 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. It's just interesting. It's a week to week league. And all of a sudden I thought New England coming in, leaking some oil, their defense has been a lot more suspect against the run. Bills exploited that again, and they blew that lead. And then the Ravens coming into Cincinnati, and they're feeling they're on cloud nine, right? With how they played, what they did, the style and fashion in which they won that game. And now you're back at home. And I know they've struggled at home all year long, but it just makes sense. It's Sunday night football. Generally, the team plays well in prime time. And the Lamar, I know we're going to talk a lot about Lamar, but like his health and his upward trajectory right now, all that to me makes sense as far as why they're favored, and also why you got to like their chances coming into this game against a young team that probably is facing some of their first adversity all year long, right? They've been on a 10-game mm-hmm. winning streak. So I think that makes sense for where they're at. And it's funny, like you said, a couple weeks back, I would have been like, I don't think this stretch is doable for them. And now I really do. Based on how things happened and transpired on Sunday between New England and Green Bay, not to get too far ahead.
kind of a cupcake schedule that New England has faced so far. Anyway, let's talk about the offense a little bit from this game. They lost snap count dramatically in this game, 71-40. In fact, it tied for the fewest snaps in team history. Now, we did go over this a fair amount on the defensive pod, so we're going to leave some of that alone. But they've had some iconic wins in low snap count games, and the big one that I go back to is the win over Tennessee in the 2000 playoffs. Was an exciting one. I think they might have had 46 snaps or something in that game, but seemed like Tennessee had the ball all day. That's for sure.
Yeah, you take me back. You'll appreciate this one, Ken, and I don't know why I'm doing this to myself, but you and I talk a lot about watching old videos and games, and mm-hmm. I'm rewatching the 2001 team. I don't know why. Not a very that's like the sister brother to the 2000 team, but yeah, I mean, a similar vibe. That's a good example. Big plays that made it so the offense wasn't on the field that long. And then there were some weird plays, you know, a couple turnovers. If you're watching the game at home, it didn't dawn on me that they didn't have the ball that much. All of a sudden, when you look at peel back the box score, it's like, oh yeah, they didn't have the ball that much. But then it made sense when you started piecing it together as to why, and the form and fashion in which the game unfolded. And it's actually, to me, the best scenario, because you don't have to, well, you want the ball, but like, I think the offense getting it done without having to do much is better.
I like that in one very particular way, and that is that I really hate fantasy football. I really hate fantasy baseball, for that matter, too. Never have gotten into either sport, but I really hate fantasy owners trying to talk about how certain players suck or are good because they're interested in the fantasy football stats. And This is a game where Lamar did exactly what was necessary to win the game. He made only one really bad throw. It was the nearly intercepted ball that was tipped over off Andrew's hands. Everything else, he was basically right on the money with. He has some great on schedule throws we're going to talk about and get into it. And he didn't put up big numbers at all, but he put up exactly the numbers that were required. And the defense did exactly what was required. In a lot of ways, they did just enough to keep Burrow a little bit flustered and pursued on some of his throwaways. So, you know, Burrow had six throws he had to throw away. Three of them ended up being sacks, and three were throwaways that he had to throw the ball out of bounds, or actually ground the ball in one case. It should have been another, you know, intentional grounding call. Yeah. But it was, they did just enough to be very effective. And the net effect of it was they won by 24, which is no small net effect.
No, 100%. You couldn't draw it up better if you tried, because they were in those conditions as well on the road. And then you have a Sunday night game. So yeah, it's a couple hours, but like you'll take that back. You're playing at night versus in the afternoon. So like, to me, for a team that's, especially with the quarterback being not 100% healthy for a long stretch of games, that's the best outcome you could possibly hope for. And for the running game, to close it out in that fashion, I think all of it lined up very well for them.
There is a potentially better thing. I'm going to get into a question a little bit earlier from the mailbag here, but Michael Shearer says, my understanding is if we win Sunday night and the Steelers stumble in Detroit in week 17, it's double in Detroit. Week 17 doesn't matter. Winner take all week 18. So if the Ravens Steelers consider resting players like a bye. So, okay, what he's saying is the Ravens beat New England. The Steelers lose to the Lions. Obviously the best possible outcome for the Ravens, but we're being hopeful here. If that were to happen, then the week 17 game is absolutely meaningless. And it gives the Ravens a chance to rest Lamar, Ronnie Stanley, maybe Marlon Humphrey. I mean, all the players who are a little bit injured can take time off. Rashad Bateman could take a week off if that were the case. They've got a lot of players banged up at this point, like all NFL teams do, and they've got some very significant star players somewhat banged up. Yep. It'd be an enormous coup for the Ravens if they were to get that.
Yeah, I came across it as well. A couple people brought that up, and I had to think about that. The initial gut feeling I had was, oh, we'll just keep riding the momentum out. And then I started thinking about it again, and I'm like, I do think that's a great opportunity to rest players, including Lamar. Mm-hmm. You can still try to win that game. It's not like, you know, it wouldn't be impossible, I don't think.
Right.
You run the ball, you know, you play Huntley. You might be able to pull it off anyway. But yeah, I think that's coup is the right term. I think it's a great advantage to have in a winner-take-all game the following week, and then potentially the playoffs. If you give them that rest one game, you now are you have a week off in a situation you normally don't have.
That's right. Right?
That would be ideal, though. Yeah,
but it is just like the playoffs starting in week 18. It's no different from that, and they've showed a willingness to rest starters in week 18 to get to week 19 as healthy as possible, or week 20 in some cases with a bye. They rested people in 2019 and I think in 2023 as well.
They did. Yeah, that's their general pattern on this, is they've rested when they've had the chance. So I can't see why they wouldn't. At bare minimum, you would bench Ronnie, you would bench Lamar. Mm-hmm. You would bench guys that are, you might have a Woozie playing through the ankle. We'll see how the week unfolds. But these types of things, you should bench those guys, those players. Yeah. And then kind of, again, it's a meaningless game. So what difference does it make, right?
You get a look at TJ Martin, TJ Tampa rather, and Keon Martin. And you also get a look at Carson Vincent. I think be pretty exciting for a lot of folks because he would get the start, I think. Let's get back to this game, though. They went 0-for-1 in the red zone again, but they had three TDs from range, Ollie and Flowers on pass plays, and then the pick six, of course. I think that Lamar looked more mobile than he has in recent weeks, and he looked also like he had an answer for the crowded line of scrimmage, which he hadn't as much against some of the teams that tried it earlier this year. But they had two plays with a crowded line of scrimmage where Lamar came out with a ball out quick throw that was just devastating. The 32-yard throw to Hopkins and the 30-yard throw to Ali was a complete setup job with the line of scrimmage crowded, with them showing a zero blitz.
Yeah, good point. And those were they were fully prepared this time out. Mm-hmm. Some good strategy there. I liked the play to Hopkins quite a bit, and I hope to see more of those RPO combinations. We saw, you can keep me honest, I think we saw it earlier in Lamar's career more than we've seen lately. So they would bake some of that in. We know the Eagles did a lot of it with Hurts in the beginning. So I just generally like it as a changeup, especially if you're in the gun. And I think it's a good one when you have a slant either left or right with the run play. So, but yeah, that play opened up the parting of the Red Sea. I was surprised at why D Hop wouldn't just keep running forward.
Yes, that bothered the hell out of me.
Like a level headed like guy in general with that, and I guess he was just surprised he was that open. But the Ali play was really, really cool. I thought. I watched the play over again, I think at least four or five times, but he really sold it very well. Ali did.
To the end, yes.
Yeah, yep. The way to get off, he did a, you know, swim move kind of to get off the block and then dash out. And that was part of it. So I think that deserves some credit as well. But definitely, they needed some answers, Ken. Like, it was just baffling. Week after week, they didn't have blitz beaters or built-in stuff. It's something that you saw more of the last two seasons from Monken. And this year it's just kind of fallen away, maybe because of the way they're getting pressured, the areas in which they're getting pressured. That could be part of it, but it was good to see that again.
Yeah, really good. Really, really some nice new wrinkles to the Ravens offense. I'll get into some stuff because I was a little befuddled by the failed boot play that Lamar made no move to, like, basically avoid the sack. And I do want to talk about that, but we'll come back to it later. From the second quarter on, I thought the Ravens moved the ball very well. They kind of ran the ball with impunity, particularly in the second half, but they moved the ball in the air well on the two drives to end the first half. They had several nice pass plays. They pass play to Andrews, the 30-yarder to Ali, the 32-yarder to Flowers. They had another, I think, 26-yarder to Flowers that was dropped right in the hole on the right sideline. The interception was really the one really bad pass play in the first half where Flowers fumbled it into the defensive back's hands.
Yeah. So for me, and this is something, I'm glad you brought that up. I thought the first two series were clunky.
Oh, yeah.
Then we had no continuity. Like, you come out on the first three plays, they ran the ball to get the first down. Then they go to the gun, throw a 3-yard pass. They had the pitch that, and then the boot, as you brought up, which we'll talk about. It just seemed like they again, like, kind of compiled these plays, stitched them together. That was a script, and I was pretty much expecting the same thing to happen because it was such a bad start. I was happy to see them get back to, all right, we're going to go under center, we're going to run the ball, play action, we're going to get that going. I don't know why you ever go away from it, other than if they're in a position, to me, like they're in no position to play around with all these different sets, really, other than as a changeup, because of how their offense has been so inconsistent. So I'd like to see them live in that place, under center, play action. That's their bread and butter right now. And I thought that's just really what it was. And then it was a sharper offense. They're on time, on schedule. Everything clicked, to your point. They looked a lot more like the Ravens offense than we've seen since probably the first drive against the Chiefs, to me. Like, and since then, you've seen very minimal glimpses. But that was encouraging, that entire sequence.
Yeah, was great. The the Bengals, one thing I really loved about the game is the fact that the Bengals waved the white flag with 7:30 to play. I liked it on two levels. First of all, I like to be playing against a mature coach who will surrender the game at the appropriate time and use the minimum number of run plays to get the game over with. And so they got that against Buffalo last year in week four when they beat him 35-10. I think they played the last 6.5 minutes in about 11 plays. So that's really hard to do when both teams, if both teams are trying to get first downs, particularly if the trailing team is trying to get first downs. But it's good when there's an adult in the room on the other side, on the trailing sideline in particular, because there's always an adult in the room on the leading sideline. And they want to get that game over with quickly. So I like that. And the Ravens almost, if the Bengals had one more first down, the Ravens could have gone the entire fourth quarter without running an offensive snap. Wow. Think about that. That is just incredible. And they had that long crossover drive that was in one play in the third quarter, ended with the pick six. Then the Bengals got the ball back again. They were methodically driving down the field 3 to 4 yards at a time kind of thing. Yeah. They went for it on fourth down, I think. They threw a couple passes in that whole drive. It was almost on that drive, like what happened in Baltimore at the end of the game was happening with Burrow in Cincinnati, that he was almost calling out the play clock. That stadium was empty, by the way. That there was nobody there. So he could have done the same thing in terms of, well, look, we got a lot of time left, 9, 8, 7. You remember, the video of him doing that in Baltimore. It's just horrible that they'd be able to pull that off in our place.
Yeah, that's really that's I guess parallel universe type stuff. And I was smiling when you said the adult in the room because of last night's game with Miami and Pittsburgh, and then Miami doing quite the opposite, right? Like they kept trying, and like, why didn't they just run the clock out? I think Aikman was exasperated with what Miami was doing to try to actually score and catch up in the game. But it was an interesting game. The 3 yards, as your to your point, it was kind of taking the checks and like, just kind of check down, short stuff. I give credit. I tweeted this out. I think it's one of those like you don't really see it type deals. But on the coverage side, deep coverage side, I think Starks is really, he's really settled in, and everything that they funnel down. And I think that was a big thing when you play Cincinnati, right? Like they didn't have Higgins, but either or, they are a big play offense. And so it's good from a control perspective defensively to get them to throw underneath, but it's also psychological. Like they thrive off the big play. So it came across. It's like that offense was almost just plotting because they didn't know what else to do with themselves. And you can't really run the ball that effectively either, right? So it's kind of – that's just all they had. And that's how you – again, you really take the wind out of that opponent, and that's to your advantage, and you could feel that energy all across.
Yeah, I think we talked so much about this on the defense. I can't go into this again in terms of what they did to frustrate Burrow in this game, but I thought – they're playing a lot of quarterbacks who have some similarities to Burrow. And the big one who has the similarities to Burrow is Rodgers. Arm strength is very minimal at this point in his career. He's mostly a throw to the spot kind of quarterback. And if you layer your coverages, you disguise your coverages, and you play downhill, those are three things that plays against Aaron Rodgers right now in his career. So I think a four-man pass rush is very much something we could see again in week 18 if that that game has meaning anyway. And I think we can see it in the playoffs. You know, yeah. I think it's a strategy against Allen, you know, to try and go after him.
Yeah, it's good that they played. We can, because I don't want to take away from your defensive mm-hmm. show, but it is something if people want to see my thoughts on it, that was something I focused on a lot after the game.
Yeah.
That change up and the fact that they had to do it because they're playing Burrow and the Bengals may, to your point, just really be the right setup game for everything that comes after. And
yeah,
you know, hopefully it keeps being as successful.
Yeah. 3.98 pass rushers per play. I don't believe I've ever seen below four before. I was trying to go back and look at some individual games that I thought might have been cases. Nothing is close. I mean, the lowest I'm getting to is about 4.15 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
So it's absurd. Okay, let's go on to some other topics here. I think we've kind of hit on the playoffs enough. And by the way, if you have other questions about the playoffs, I've done several playoff videos. And you know, the one thing I'll say is, please, if you're a fan out there, if somebody's gone to the long trouble to write a long tweet or a long article in particular, laying out every possible playoff scenario, don't talk about, you know, screw it, just win. That's the only way you get in the playoffs. Just win. Ignore all this math crap. Look, don't do that. It's minimizing what these people have taken the time to do. And it's actually, you know, really annoying behavior.
Yeah. Or the flip side is this team has no shot anyways. It's like, yeah. That's not the point of this
discussion. Yes.
For you. And I know there's Alex who's out there recently come across him. I wanted to give him a shout out. He's on Twitter. He lays out scenarios as well, and they don't have to do this. They're doing it for all of our benefits. So, I echo that all the way and want to promote that stuff out as much as possible because I'm not a math person. So I appreciate the work that's being done for this. It's much needed.
All right. Well, thanks, Dave. Appreciate that. Well, let's move on. They went only 2 of 7 on third down in this game. Now, the 2 of 7 is I'm not as concerned about, although that's not a good percentage. What I'm more concerned about is they only got third down 7 times the whole game. Meanwhile, the Bengals went 3 of 15, and they did go 3 of 5 on fourth down. So they actually kind of converted 40% of their third downs into first downs, but they also had to give up 2 drive-ending turnover on downs in the process. So your thoughts, do we need to be worried about the Ravens' third down conversion rate at this point?
Because of the weirdness of this game, maybe not here, but I am worried about it on short yardage still. I'm still skeptical there. And when you play better teams, that'll show up. So this weekend, now one thing I will say is that I hope with Lamar and his ability to run, even if it's as a gravity pull, that will help them. They just can't overpower people at the point of attack like they have in the past. So that's where I'm concerned more than anything. That would be my take on it. Like I think overall third down, they're not very good, right? Like I could be, I don't have it in front of me for the season, but I think they're like middle of the pack or something like that.
They were middle of the pack last I checked, but I will look it up while we're going here and then we'll come back to it. I see third down. Sure. I've got it right here. So they are, it's not good. 24th in the league at 37.35%. It is a tight pack between, you know, about number 13 and number 26 probably. So it's not good. You know, that's for certain. And I've been very down and talking basically on a weekly basis about the barbelled results of this offense, that they have a lot of explosive plays, but they also have a lot of plays where they choke on short yardage or have negative plays that end drives for them. And they're taking a lot more sacks than they have before. Mm-hmm. In this game, by the way, the sacks, not really on the offensive line. It was on other players, including Lamar, that were a problem in this one. Their series efficiency was okay in this game, 15 of 21. That's despite the poor passing weather. I think that's actually a pretty good number. 71% is probably about the league average, but they were, you know, given the weather conditions, I actually think that's pretty good. But, you know, they haven't been they haven't been a team that's like threatened like some past Lamar teams to be up there near 3 points per drive by any stretch this year.
Yeah. I think they're still working the kinks out off on their in the passing game. The running game still also there's some issues, but I have been more encouraged with the ground game the last, I guess like the last 3 weeks or so. It looks more like it's coming back to what it was. And in the passing game, there's still issues, whether it's Lamar's timing, receivers not getting open right away or something to that effect, right? Like the receivers still not quite there either. The line we talked about all season long. So like there's things there where they're just not as sharp, razor sharp. But the glimpses that we saw in this game, I hope they can kind of build from that. Now, the interesting thing will be against New England, which they are, despite the run defense being not as good lately, they have been a good defense all season. So this will be a very, I think, fair gauge, barometer, litmus test of where they're at, if they're ready to take that step, like whether they're ready to finally start playing clean football on offense.
Here's I guess the question I'd have for you, because and I'll have some setup with it. You hit on it earlier that basically I think it's Lamar's mobility that has been hurt the Ravens by maybe 75 or 100 points this year, and I do not take that number lightly. As a math guy, I do not take that number lightly. 100 points, a point differential is enormous, but the Ravens are like plus 20 or something for the year right now, or plus 15, and this is a team that has typically been 150 plus or 120 plus, and it's a team also that has led the National Football League in point differential since Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson came into the league in 2018, and by a wide margin. It's not close. There's a couple teams that are kind of in the ballpark in Kansas City and Buffalo, and then it's a big drop off to the rest of the crowd. And by the way, the Steelers over that entire period are some ridiculously small number of points above zero for the entire time, but they've had very good success in one score games. So here's the point. I promise I'm getting to it. That if Lamar is truly back as a runner where the mesh point is back, do you see any reason why this Ravens team with this offensive line can't be getting back to being a very dominant offense?
No, not dominant. They can be very good, but I don't hold out hope that they will be what they were last season. The counter to that could be there was a lot of stuff he kind of covered up, right? So like he was playing at like Super Scion. I don't even know where that reference came from. The ultra mode guy that he was like on Turbocharge, right? So I expect somewhere in the middle of that. And if that's the case, they can be very good. And I'm not as scared of these defenses that are left in the pack as I think. Like I have a lot of respect for Denver. I have a lot of respect for Houston. Not saying that they are not capable of dominating the Ravens offense. Of course they are, because of what we've seen from the line and some of these other issues. But Lamar at even the B plus level, yeah, I think he's Lamar B plus. And then I like what I saw it out of Henry too. Just like they both looked explosive. So I think they can still do so many things, and they have a lot of guys capable in the offense. But I guess long-winded way of saying, I don't expect the dominance. I expect moments, and I wonder if that's enough in this field. That's where I'm at.
Okay, so I think this the team could come together in a way. First of all, I do think this is the best set of skill position players the Ravens have had for Lamar at any time. And that goes running back, you know, wide receiver, tight end, all of that is at as high as a level as the Ravens have ever had in a season. And everybody's healthy now, you know, with the exception of Bateman this last game, you know, basically everybody's healthy. Ali has turned out to be a much more significant player than we expected. And I don't really consider him as any step down from Justice Hill at this point. I think he's helping the team.
Actually, that's a good point, Ken. If we can expand on that between Keaton being healthy, Keaton Mitchell, who just is a massive X factor for them today. Yep. He's a guy, anytime he touches the ball, could break it. You have two running backs that can do that, and Ali's got that capability too on some levels. And then D-Hop is really good. The numbers will not speak to how he has played. And I would say, you know, you mark him down, of course, from his prime, but he's pretty much on the same level as he's been the last couple of seasons, just without the same opportunities. Walker is a guy downfield that can hit you with some plays. So, yeah, you're right. I think the weapons are there. The potential is there. I'm hoping the Lion play will be suitable enough.
Well, if the 2024 Ravens were one of the best DVOA teams of all time, a lot of that was on offense and not on defense.
Okay. Yep.
So that team, if you look piece by piece at the players, the one guy who's having a dramatically worse season is Lamar with the injuries. The offensive line even is, I mean, Stanley didn't have a great year last year, and he's not having a great year this year, but he's actually playing a little bit worse, but not a lot worse. And if you go, you know, left of that, you look at McCary versus Voorhees. I don't even think that's that big a difference. McCary had some penalties early on. He actually did play pretty well. He's probably the biggest single difference on that entire line. And I still don't think it's that huge. They've had great continuity on this offensive line in terms of keeping people healthy. That's an underrated factor in terms of you know, being able to act together. Falele has been, for the entire year, has probably been a slight step, a sideways step. He played very, very well at the end of 2024. He's the biggest disappointment in terms of a guy who didn't fulfill the promise that he had, as I see. But I look at this team and I'm saying, okay, you know, the big difference, and it's not, I'm not saying it's his fault, and I'm not saying it's, you know, that there shouldn't be someone to relieve him of some of his cape-wearing duties, but the big problem is that Lamar is hurt right now. And yeah, and that has just totally taken the misdirection out of the run game, which is the fuel that drives the Ravens offense.
Yeah, if you get, it's not hard to look and see, and if you look at the season at a glimpse, where the offense was and did look dominant up to the first half of the Kansas City game.
Yeah.
Like
let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Those three games that they had before that, they were fine. Now, they had their moments against the Browns in the first half of that game where they got sacked. But the Browns, we know, have a good defense, so you kind of chalked that up to that. They played well against Detroit. They played well against Buffalo. And I thought after the first drive against the Chiefs, like, okay. And then it just fell flat on their faces. And the Lamar thing is a combination of factors. Injury, of course, is a big part of it. And I think he's had to, I think personally, like when he was, when he knew he wasn't right coming back from the injury, like Miami onward, I just think he adjusted his approaches as well. Was a little more like ball control. They just needed to win those games. They got it done. And when they started to have to, and to your point, the pressure packages, like teams were really attacking him, knowing maybe he's not going to make them pay for it. But we saw in the second half against Pittsburgh, that started to change. Now I think he's probably at a good place, health-wise, mentally, right? But he is now taking advantage of the defense when they do that. So I think some of that's like a learning curve for him naturally as well. Like, how do I play with the construct I have that I'm not quite myself? I also made a point, too. It looked to me like in this week, he was doing more of the extension of plays, right? So we saw him move up and down in the pocket, you know, side laterally. And he made those plays. We saw the throw to Zay. So I thought that was I'm just speculating, but I think that's a confidence thing too, Ken, where it's like when he's on it, he will do that and think he can make the play, like you said, Superman-wise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where you want him to be. That's where this team needs him to be, really.
Yeah, he was feeling it. There's no doubt about it, moving around. It didn't always work out. You know, he took that S-5 towards the end of the game on Vincent's play, Vincent's first play, where, by the way, Vincent, great highlight block on that play. But he ran all the way around the pocket. And finally, somebody, the spy, had to come in from level two after he broke the pocket left. And then he ran back to the right and chased him down for the sack after he tripped over a downed player. For the S-5. So anyway, I'm
trying to recall that play.
It was late in the game. We'll talk about it a little bit later when we talk about Carson Vinson. So anyway, it was a. I think you're right. I think it's about feeling it, and then I keep having to say, it's the Lamar injury which caused all of this. Everything is basically, if you want to have the Belichick tree of coaching or whatever, it's the Lamar tree of injury impacts. That's basically caused this to happen. Lamar loses confidence. Lamar doesn't want to step into throws. Lamar doesn't want to run the read option as often. Lamar might check out of certain plays based on a look he sees at the line of scrimmage when the old Lamar would have said, screw it. I can make that play anyway.
And I'll just add, I've been pretty hard on him for the games when he came back, because I thought there were a lot of timing stuff that he just wasn't on time with his throws. And that, to your point, is probably back to, okay, I can't step into this lane. I can't mechanically, right? Like, the mechanics might've been hindered because he doesn't feel like he can step up, and all these little things add up. But this game and the second half of the Pittsburgh game have to be highly encouraging that he's on the right track. Again, I'm tempering my expectations of what he can get to if he gets to like last year Lamar in any way, shape, or form. I think the team could not only, if they get in the playoffs, they can win the Super Bowl, but like, that's I'm just hoping even a notch below that will do it for me, and give this team a real good shot. And like you said, all the other pieces that they have, they still have that upside, they still have that talent.
Yeah, they rushed for 9.1 yards per carry excluding the kneels in this game. And that was only three guys doing 100% of the rushing. Ali didn't get a carry. Huntley got three kneels. His doesn't count. So it was Lamar, Mitchell, and Henry, and they all had fantastic stats. Obviously, Henry was the best at 11 yards per carry, I think, and then Lamar had 8 or something, and Mitchell was around 8 also. So just outrageous success in those three guys, and they're each playing an important complementary role in there. Lamar's absolutely needed to add that element of misdirection. And by the way, one thing we saw from the Ravens offense, which tells me Lamar is more healthy, doesn't have anything to do with Lamar. It's the fact that they had 3 counter plays in this game that potentially puts more dramatic responsibility on Lamar if the ball gets pulled or if he doesn't make the handoff, to be able to react to open places they leave on the line of scrimmage. But they're very comfortable now moving guys again and having them taking advantage of the defense running themselves out of position. One of the players who has to do it is Lamar. So if you look back at those 3 plays, they were a run for 11, a run for 15, and a pass for 32 were the 3. In fact, it was the pass for 32, pass for 30, whichever it was. The one is one of those 2. So they totally dominated the 3 counter plays they tried in this game, and they hadn't been doing it at all for the last few weeks. It's the weirdest thing. You see the Ravens offense, it's like, where are the counters? Where are the 2 guys pulling at once?
Yeah, no, it was a big difference for sure. It opened up the second level running lanes for both Henry and Keaton.
Yeah.
And I also want to take a moment to talk about Derrick Henry, because he looked back to himself too. Not that he's looked bad to me. Like, I think he's been fine. Don't get me wrong, but there is something about how he was able to make guys miss in the hole a little bit. Yeah. Like his that cut he made on the right side run that almost went to the house. I think it was like he made the DB miss and that was just, I haven't seen that from him consistently all season. It seems like with him, if it's just the lane is there, and if it's clear, he'll hit it and get 50 yards like he did against the Browns, right? But this is like he had movement. He was following the blocks, the flow, right? He looked spry. He looked like energized. And that made me excited too, just as much as Lamar. Because if you have Henry at that level, we know what he's capable of. Last year he was that. So I thought there was that's encouraging too, but they didn't have Keaton with Henry last year at this time. And so that's that's to me the big game factor of everything. Those 2 guys hitting big plays. And then Lamar, like you said, has to do enough.
Let me go back to Henry for a second. 6.0 yards after contact per attempt in this game.
There you go.
So he had 4 missed tackles forced to the game on only 11 carries. And if you've been listening to this show over the last few weeks, you know how much I've been complaining about the lack of missed tackles in Henry's game, that, you know, you can't blame it all on the offensive line, basically, because he's had worse lines at Tennessee and gotten 2.4 times as many missed tackles per play. Last year he had a great missed tackle year. And this year he was at 0.09. I believe after this game, he's up to 0.14. I can calculate that again in a second, but I believe he's up to 0.14 again, which would match his worst ever, which was in his rookie year. So at least he's back kind of on the dot chart. Is not a complete outlier at this point, but we have not seen great plays like that. And we did see him leave a leg on a couple of different occasions on one long run right and one of the long runs to the left side as well, where contact was made early. I don't know exactly where PFF has spotted their missed tackles, and I'm using their numbers for missed tackles forced, but I do know that I saw it happen once to each side on long runs.
I think that's accurate. That was what's been missing. Is his ability to put, I mean, again, he was breaking the tackle, guys were bouncing off of him on one level, but then he also had the agility, and that, again, it's not really a big hallmark of his game, but it's subtle, and he can make guys miss enough just with his feet, and like I said, the cuts, and he was like, we talk about the feeling it part for Lamar, I thought he was feeling it too. Henry was feeling it.
So, by the way, Henry, just to go follow up on that, is at 0.13 missed tackles forced per attempt. So he's still below his career low previous to this year. And he's had a lot of, I know a lot of people talk to me about, well, wait a minute, he's getting hit further back and this offensive line is great. No, he was hit a lot further back in Tennessee. In fact, he had a year in Tennessee where he had a 0.7 average yards before contact, and he still had, I think, 4.5 yards after contact in that year. That's not the central reason. The central reason is Derrick Henry's not breaking enough tackles this year. And hopefully that'll fix it up. I agree with you. I don't think he's having a bad year. I think he's still, you know, pretty darn central to the Ravens offense, and he's plenty good enough that he's earning his salary, I would say, this year. I'm probably more concerned about the missed tackle rate in terms of what it says about the future for Derrick Henry.
That's fair. He could be on the Jerome Bettis trajectory, right? Where you saw Bettis, and I have always thought that even when they gave the contract extension to him and like when they first signed him, I hoped two years or three of like just stud Henry level. Playing with Lamar helps with that. And then you kind of transition into a Marcus Allen, Jerome Bettis kind of role where you're like, you're more of short yardage, and then hopefully Keaton Mitchell is that guy or whoever. But that is very much on the table to me. One thing I'll leave with is I think he's also pushing the pile pretty well. Yeah. Like that's a small thing, but like you saw in the first, I think it was first series runs, like the pile was moving 2-3 yards, and that wasn't really happening either. Like that's a big thing for like he needs to be the catalyst for that to me. Like just out of steam, get them an extra 1 or 2 yards that helps them in manageable third downs and those situations.
I'm completely with you on that. And that is a place where I think the offensive line needs to play a role too. And obviously pushing the pile is something that a lot of teams have done successfully in recent years, but Daniel Falele is a player that I want to do more of that. Yeah. And that's obviously kind of frustrating. Still one of the great plays I can remember from the Mile High Miracle game is they had that 2nd and 10 play, I want to say, and they ran, I guess it was Rice, because I don't think it was Pierce, I think it was Rice. They ran for 11 yards, but Yanda ended up pushing him the last 4 of that, it seemed like, to get that key first down on the game-winning drive.
Yeah, there's an aggressiveness you have to play with, and at some point in the game, comes down to, I just want to knock your head off.
Right.
And I just don't know that those two guards have that in them all the time, or even like that's my concern. It gets back to short yardage stuff we said at the beginning of the show. Like when you play teams like it, and that's a great example, a playoff game, Denver, I'm going to impose my will. You just knew Yanda was like, we got it. We're close. We're getting it. So I don't know. That's another topic for another show. But like, that's to me, like where I don't have that confidence level at that point. But you're right. Like, just maybe this opened things up a little bit. I will say that Kohler and Ricard were mashing guys. So like, to me, like that aggressiveness was there in patches. Hopefully carries across the line the last few weeks here.
By the way, I don't think there's a problem with effort, honestly. I think all the guys on the line of scrimmage are playing high effort. There's some befuddledness in Falele's game. And there's some not ideal combination of length and build for Voorhees' game that I would put a significant
almost like effort. If you switch their bodies, it'd be interesting to see how that would work. Because I think Voorhees is limited with his like measurables, kind of like he's an effort guy. And then with Falele, there's not that aggressiveness for his size. And the other thing, and I know he doesn't have a lot of experience playing football, but now he's played for 2 years. Like at some point, some of the stuff I saw from Emory Jones as a rookie, like looking for work, not just standing around. Like that's the stuff that really gets on my nerves with him. Like,
right.
I know there's a lot of people that bash him, take personal shots. I think he plays at an, like you said, average level at best, and that's suitable when all the other guys are playing well. That's the stuff where you kind of scratch your head at, and I don't know if that's just something that they cannot coach him up on anymore. It's kind of like,
it's something that can be fixed because it's about decisiveness and processing. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you really, I don't want to go too far with this because I'll say something I really regret, but if he was, like had some learning disability or something, and he just couldn't process things at the same rate as other people. That'd be another matter. I don't believe that. I think Daniel Falele is probably a normal guy of fairly average intelligence, and I don't think that that's the issue. I think he's just for whatever reason, he gets on a football field and he just can't process in the way he needs to do it.
Yeah, I think that's I think you just hit the nail on the head. There's a performer, the performers that are on the field, you can practice it and they might look great and he might just be doing that. But then there's a big moment and he just isn't there. And that's the limitation. That is the gap. And it gets back to like those guys that really, again, line play is all about like just knocking a guy out. At the end of the day, you need somebody that can do that, at least. Well, not somebody. You hope all of them can do it, but like, especially in that interior, right? That's where you get that push. So yeah, it's frustrating.
All right, let's talk about Lamar a little bit because we need to do this. We're kind of running behind on the show here, just natural because you and I love to talk football. We get into everything. They did not really go after Lamar with big numbers in this game. I'll go through the pass rush numbers really quickly. They used 3 one time and they sacked him. That was the play I was talking about. They sacked him for -5 after chasing him around the spy. Eventually, after the pocket was broken, came in to get him. They had 10 plays of 4, and those were 66 net yards. 2 sacks and 1 turnover, though, on the 4-man rush. Those are not good results, either one of those. Then with a 5-man rush, 4 plays for 67 yards. So once again, Lamar like looking better with more rushers coming after him. 1 sack included in those, and then 6 he threw an incomplete pass on his only. So, you know, 13.4 yards per play with 5 or more rushing him. Lamar seemed to play pretty well against what other people call blitzes, 5+ pass rushes.
Yeah, I thought he played well. He did. Yeah, I don't know if I'm putting the cart before the horse. I did want to talk about this naked boot play, but like there's some stuff that still he does where I feel like it's maybe shaking out of what the quick decisions that he was making last year, just flawlessly. I don't really remember any time thinking, oh, he wasn't like something really fooled him or he just wasn't as decisive. Like there might have been very minimal moments of that. This year it's every game and there's like a handful. He did cut that down a lot. In this game, and he had an interception that shouldn't have been, and he had a touchdown that should have been. So that's like if you take those two plays and those are both on Zay, now you're talking about, you know, a 3 touchdown, no interception game for him, like out of 12 attempts, I think. So that's fantastic. That's kind of okay. Like Lamar.
Right corner of the end zone. I think that was on both of them probably because the ball was a little high. But you're right. It was
a tough play. Mm-hmm. However, I think the degree of difficulty was more on for Lamar to have to escape. You know, make that throw. Really, the only place he could put it. It was on Zay. It's the type of play like that was Davante Adams, and I'm not knocking Zay. Like he's a very good player. I'm saying like. That has to be made by a elite receiver. Maybe for the middle, you know, average guy, you could give it a pass. But ultimately, I thought Lamar played very well. This is, again, to me, building off of, I thought, the second half of the Pittsburgh game where he also played very well.
Yeah, I know he played very well. He left, by my count, 10 throws on the field versus Cincinnati that were either ample time and space throws or ball lock quick throws. You should complete most of your ball out quick throws. That's just the nature of them. And your guy is typically open. But I went through each one and there are 10 that I saw that were unbelievable. It's been terrible recently with ample time and space, just terrible. And I want to get to that this game here because he had 6 ample time space opportunities in this game, which is 38%. That's a really good number. That's about 10 percentage points higher than you would expect him to get. What he did with that, he went 2 of 4 for 35 yards, allowed 2 sacks and threw an interception.
Oh, wow.
Not good. So yeah. At 5.8 yards per play, 8.5 is the standard for ample time and space that I use in my model for expected yards here. And then he had, you know, to have a turnover thrown in there is just befuddling.
Yeah, that turnover being
just. Yeah, it was not on him. Yeah.
And it's like that's the stuff that they still do every game. They have these misses. It could be a wide open miss. It could be the drops. It could be, you know, turnovers, right? Yeah. And just they're not as sharp as we're used to. They only reserve those follies for the playoffs typically. But this has been like all year on some level. The only thing is the encouraging thing I can only point to would be, again, reduction of like how often it happens.
Yeah.
Is their standard is against themselves at this point, like offensively.
Yeah.
It's relative to the rest of the opponents in the league. They can still be a top five group pretty easily.
I guess it's pretty fair to say though, that if Flowers catches the ball instead of it being intercepted, all of a sudden he's up to something close to 50 net yards. That number looks perfectly fine. And even with two sacks, the average yardage looks good on those ATS. So it is a small sample size. I do want to point that out. Yep. We talked about the four. No, I didn't think I did that. Four ball out quick opportunities. It's really low for a game, by the way, to have four ball out quicks. But one of them was the 32-yard pass to Hopkins. And another one was the 30-yard touchdown to Ali. So four for 68 on those. So obviously I have no problem with that. That's fantastic and way above his expectation of 6 yards per play. And then he was pressured six times. And on those, he completed two of four for 25 net yards with two sacks. That doesn't seem good, but 4.1 yards per play is actually above the standard for pressure of 3.5 yards per play. So
that's encouraging too to me, because that just signals again that he's probably back to form.
Yeah.
And he looked, yeah, and it looked that way just going back to the game and rewatching it. He was evading things better. He was, again, feeling of getting back to like, I can make this guy miss. I can do this. I can move this way laterally. I can buy some time. That was coming back. So again, it could just be he's very close. And it looked that way to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think he looked as good as he's looked really since the early stages of that week three games against the Chiefs. I think that was about the last time he looked as good.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right. We talked about what he left on the field. Outperformed his opportunity set overall by 32 yards, 2.0 per play above expectation. That's outstanding. You do that every game, you're gonna do well. Love the fact that they took the Bob Greasy early 1970s Dolphins approach and threw only 12 passes. It was 16, including the four sacks they took, which is a high number, but it certainly did a very good job with that.
It's just so funny to hear, and I've been, you know, here and there catching the post-game comments from the national media, but it's just funny that they were getting taken to task but it's almost like, well, they didn't look good. Like, they had barely had the ball for one, and they were, why did they need to do more? 12 attempts, the run. Thank you to Todd Monken for doing that. Like, I was so happy he did that, and the way he used those backs was just perfect to me.
Right. You know what we have to thank for that is the same thing, how slugging percentage in a lot of way, when it's combined with on-base percentage, gives us OPS. That ruined baseball statistics in a number of ways because it overvalued slugging relative to on base. Okay. The thing that has ruined football statistics is EPA per play. And there are quarterbacks who are highly aware, Mr. Allen, about how to add the maximum amount of EPA per play and make your own records look good. And that is, I believe it is a central reason why Josh Allen has a bunch of 1 yard TD runs, is he knows that's what it does for his EPA per play. And it's just a misallocation of where that value is. In the case of a player like anybody else, I'll just take generic player. Football games are played for expected wins. They're not played for expected points. And the more you tend to beat the living snot out of your opponent, the more you're going to have a lot of second half plays where you give up expected points in exchange for expected wins. The far right example on this is when you kneel down for -1 is absolutely a loss in terms of expected points. Right. And it gets you to the end of the game, which is exactly the objective you should be going for.
Yeah.
We've lost sight of that by magnifying the importance of expected points. I hate, absolutely detest expected points models for that reason. The other reason is that they're not transparent. You know, I can't look inside and say, wait a minute, how did you come up with that? It's not available to me.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I know. I'm with you. If this game in particular is one of those where it's clear as day. It's an old school game. Like if you looked at this game in 2000, you'd be like, this is great. Like he threw the ball 12 times. He had two touchdowns, could have had a third, 10 of 12. Let's call it 10 of 12 for all intents and purposes, right? Like he had a drop and he had two drops. And then they ran the ball and they finished the game off. And it was just, to me, like I don't mean this disrespectfully. I like Todd Monken. I think he is a good offensive coordinator. He's in the top tier. But he tends to overthink things, I think, at times. I think he does tend to get pass happy at times. And this was one of those where he just said, we're running the ball and we're gonna play to the elements. And these guys don't want to hit anymore. And they didn't. And so I just thought at a base level, getting back to the original topic of like the amount of carries, the running distribution, I just felt like this was the model going forward. I don't think it's always going to work out that, you know, 2-to-1 ratio way, but this is what I want to see. And I think this is how they will be successful going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you completely. And I'd love to see this more. I'd like to disappoint fantasy owners and get wins in the process in terms of any length of the season goes to for the Ravens. We can hit on everything else except for one thing in the second half of the show. They did not use a lot of set and chip blocks in this game. 7 sets and 4 chips. It's 0.69 per passer sack of the 16 plays, 11 out on 16 plays. I did want to say this because last week, it very excessively to the right side, 21-7 right to left. In this game, it was 6 right, 4 left, 1 middle, so fairly balanced. And by the way, you're always going to have a few more to the right because your formations tend to be unbalanced to the right side with a tight end more often on that side because your running game tends to be right-handed. So it's going to be more likely that you'll have the tight end on that side and have a chance for an extra chance for a chip or a set on that side. One thing that you know came up this game, though, was that Miles Murphy was alone with Rosengarten for a fair amount of this game. And I thought Rosengarten had a very solid game.
Yeah. No, those are good details. It all kind of played out on with the eye test as well. They really just dominated on the right side and gets back to the way getting back to those counter runs, like with Charlie blocking so well, Charlie Kolar and Pat Ricard, like they were fantastic as well. So all of that to me combined with Rosengarten's game, very encouraging, makes a ton of sense in terms of that data as well. And hopefully that can be something they lean on as they go forward, but also hopefully that can create some good stuff from the play action passing game as well. Like just that, you know, that movement, they can create some more change ups off of it because of how well they're playing on that side.
You know, you're hitting on that drives the Ravens offense is how they get players to run themselves out of position. And they've got multiple misdirection elements, but the one that represents probably 70% of their misdirection value is Lamar and Henry in the mesh point, or Lamar and anybody in that mesh point, because every running back who's ever played with Lamar has been a lot better playing with Lamar than not playing with Lamar.
Right.
so you really get value from that misdirection. The Ravens just missing that this season. I really hope what we saw in this game is something they can build on still and get Lamar a little bit healthier and back closer to who he has been normally since he's come into the league.
Absolutely. They got to have it to go on a run.
Dev, always a pleasure talking football with you. Just fantastic to get to spend an hour here. We got an hour left to go. Tell folks where they can talk with football with you online if they want to contact you.
And thanks for having me. As always, I appreciate the chance and platform. We've been doing this for so long, so it's like slipping into something that's familiar. But folks can talk. Well, probably the easiest is to talk to me on X at Dev Panchwa. Shoot me a question, or just if you want to just talk about anything. I'm up for that. Also, Russell Street Report. You can still find my content there. I've definitely been a little less active than I have in the past, but that's still my home for articles long form. So yeah, just look out for those spots, and happy to talk football. Excited at this time of year to do that.
Okay, outstanding. Other folks out there, we're going to get to the mailbag in the second half of the show. Got some great questions, and I want to encourage people to use hashtag film study mailbag. Appreciate the amplification earlier today, Deb, because I think we got some questions after that that are quite good, and want to hear more. And if you'd like, I will try and slot them correctly into the offensive show, the defensive show, Friday morning GM, which a lot of people have questions for, or also do them in 1 to 3 minute videos when I'll just respond to something that I think either is late for the mailbag or is best suited in a video like that. But I really appreciate all the effort you guys have put in. Dev, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken. Pleasure as always. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hockey fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.